I asked myself, who is counting on me? Like, who are the people in my life that need me to be my best self?
Welcome to the Productivityist Podcast. I'm your host, Mike Vardy, and this week on the show, I'm joined by Chris Norton. He is the co-author of The 7 Longest Yards, our love story of pushing the limits while leaning on each other. And it really is the miraculous true story of defying the impossible. Now, Chris is a speaker, author, adoptive, and foster parent. He suffered a severe spinal cord injury playing college football. Yet 7 years later, he joyfully conquered the challenge of walking his wife, Emily, down the aisle of their wedding. And they've recently adopted 5 girls as of the recording of this conversation. He's such an inspiring story. I heard him on Jonathan Fields' podcast, which I'll link to in the show notes. I talk about that during this episode. We talk about football. I'm a football fan. We talk about parenting. We talk about overcoming huge challenges and obstacles. So much more in this episode. It's a compelling conversation. I'm so happy to bring it to you. So here's my conversation with Chris Norton here on the Productivityist Podcast. I'd like to welcome Chris Norton to the Productivityist Podcast. Chris, thanks for joining me today.
Hey, Mike, it's good to be here.
So whenever I hop on a call with somebody who I've not talked to before, but see that we have some common interests, I have to be cognizant of the fact that the record button eventually does have to be pressed because there's some stuff that we're getting into right out of the gate that I'm like, oh, let's talk football because I'm a huge football fan. But you used to play football and I want to get in. There's a story. I mean, the 7 longest yards, we're going to talk about the book, that you've co-wrote with your wife, Emily. And so when I heard from my friends, Mark and Angel, who've been on the show before, that, you got to talk to Chris. He's got a great story. And I was like, okay, this is a productivity podcast. So let me take a look and see where we can kind of hook this up. And when I listened to, I read the book. And then when I listened to you and Jonathan talk, Jonathan Fields, I'll link to that podcast in the show notes as well. There was a lot of things that came to form. Like, yeah, this can work for this show. But for those who don't know who you are out of the gate that are listening right now, can you share a little bit about who you are and, you know, that you used to play football? I'm going to be right up front, why you don't play football anymore, but you still follow it, but why don't you play it anymore?
Yeah. So, Chris Norton grew up in a small town in Iowa, went to play college football at Luther College back in 2010. And as a freshman, 18-year-old kid, everything's going according to plan, working out perfectly. And then running down to cover the kick on the 6th game of the season, I hit the ball carrier at full force, full speed, but I mistimed my jump just by a split second. And instead of getting my head in front of the ball carrier and colliding with my shoulder, my head and the side of my neck hit his knees. In an instant, I lose all feeling and movement from my neck down. I'm face down. The pile clears. I'm trying to push off the ground. Nothing is working. And I'm telling myself, okay, Chris, you stand up. Like, what's going on? And nothing was working. I was just so confused. But I'm telling myself, bad things happen to other people. And little did I know, I just suffered a severe spinal cord injury. And I was given a 3% chance to ever regain any feeling or movement back below my neck by the surgeons. And that would literally change the course of my life. Trying to fight for every bit of movement and feeling from my neck down.
In the back of the book, one of the things you read right out is the miraculous true story of defying the impossible. And, reading your story, one of the things, and I actually talked to Neil Pasricha about this not too long ago. He's the guy who wrote the Book of Awesome and his, How to Be Awesome, and you are awesome. And frankly, I mean, you hit all those notes, but one of his new book is about resilience. And when I asked him about resilience, he said, the difference between grit and perseverance and resilience is the ability to get back up. To go through this and then, knowing, I mean, because that's, I mean, you were, that's what you did. You were a competitor. You were looking to move up, you know, from special teams to, you know, who knows, but, you know, the sky in your mind was the limit. You're a young guy. What did it take for you to get, you know, to get past that and know, like, cause that was what your identity was kind of, I wouldn't say wrapped in that, but that was part of your identity to say, okay, you know what? I need to get back up, you know, both, you know, kind of figuratively, cause you know, you go about the, you know, the idea of the progression, but also, you know, at one point, you know, and right on the cover of the book, you're walking down the aisle, at, you know, with your wife. So what did it take for you to be resilient in the face of, hey, things won't ever be the same again?
I would say it was the discomfort. It was this sense of like urgency and this pain that I didn't want to live in. Like, I don't like this. I don't want to be in this. I want to change this. And if you don't like where you're at, then do something about it. That's what my dad told me as a young kid. And it just clicked. Like, why complain and feel sorry for yourself? Like, why spend so much energy being like a victim or feeling sorry when you could be putting that into action, into movement, into doing something about it? And so that's exactly what I did. Although, you know, I was upset, I was frustrated, I was mad, I had all those emotions, but I then try to use that towards figuring out, okay, what can I do today? Like, what's one little thing I can do to better myself? And then I had this stubbornness that, yeah, I'm going to beat it. Like, I'm not going to be part of that 97%. I'm going to be that 3%. Just growing up as a kid, playing sports and going through school, I failed a lot. Like, I've been knocked down a lot. And I've learned over the years that, like you said, you have to pick yourself up. It's not about the fall, but it's about standing back up. And I knew, you know, I've been resilient before, and it just gave me the confidence that I'm going to get back up from this. And it just is a matter of time. And I'm just going to do whatever it takes to get through it. And so just taking it one day at a time. When I thought too much about the future, I would just, that would paralyze me even more. Thinking about, you know, what could be, you know, thought about how things could be different if I wouldn't have made that tackle. That, again, that just paralyzed me more so than being physically paralyzed. So I just had to really focus in on what's one small task, one action I can do right now in this moment to move forward in the right direction.
Staying positive in the face of adversity is challenging for most people. And I mean, again, having this life-changing, you know, occurrence happen to you again, you know, at such a, you know, at a young age where you're looking ahead going, this is not what I envision my life to be. How, I mean, you talked about your dad just now saying, you know, hey, look for the positive. It's how do you keep that steadfast? Like, how do you stay positive? Because there's got to be days where you say, especially maybe even when you revisit the story, because I mean, this is not the first time you've told this story, you know, on a podcast. And I mean, there's the book, there's the documentary. I mean, this story is being retold. And you know, there has to be some moments where you're like, man, how do you, what do you do to say, okay, to cast that aside? Because you're human, right? Those emotions will show up. How do you keep that from, you know, kind of, either dwelling on it or overtaking you, because I mean, it's got to be something that you've got to work on.
Yeah, I mean, at its core, and you've heard it before, but gratitude. I mean, if you can just place yourself in a state of gratitude and focusing on what you can do, what you do have, and focus on the progress that you've made up to this point, it just like changes your outlook on everything. It turns like this fear into hope. And that's exactly what I was doing, just understanding that, you know, I have my family, I have my faith, you know, even the slightest bit of progress. Like, I went from almost passing out from the lack of breathing to being able to regulate my breathing. Like, that was a victory. Like, I was proud of that progress, and I focused in on that, the air that I was getting versus the air I was losing. Shrugging my shoulder was the first movement I got back after my spinal cord injury. But that shoulder shrug was a sign of progress. And those little things is where I kept most of my energy on versus what I've lost. And I think it's so easy in life to compare yourself, to see what others have or what you don't have. And You just got to ground yourself with where you're at, what you do have, and how far you've come.
Now, when you, you know, again, looking at the cover of the book, you're walking down that aisle, but that wasn't the first time you did that, right? You, there was another instance, and you talk about this in the book, but I want you to share that story of, you know, that that wasn't the first time that you attempted to get up and take steps after you were told that literally there was a 3% chance you'd be able to do that.
Yeah. So I just kept fighting again, like day by day, just trying to get a little bit more movement back. But then again, you know, at night I would cry myself to sleep wondering, you know, what my life would look like. Would I ever meet a girl that would want to be with me? Will I ever be happy in a wheelchair? All these questions swirling my mind. And, you know, I'll never forget, it was about the fifth week in, and I've been making some progress, moving my arms, but nothing in my legs. But I could feel this new sensation in my left big toe. And I was excited about it. Okay, so it means progress. Something is awakening in this left big toe. I tell my neurologist all about it, and he tells me, you know, Chris, I'm sorry, but you're experiencing a phantom feeling that you want to believe that you can feel something differently in your left big toe, but you tricked yourself into thinking it's real. You made it up. And I knew what I was feeling was real and wasn't this phantom feeling, but he could care less. And I was destroyed. And my dad, who was with me, was destroyed. And I consider him to be the strongest person I know. And he has tears coming down his eyes and just says, you know, Chris, do not let anyone tell you what you can or cannot do. And I look back at him, tears in my eyes, and said, never will. And I responded with just more hope and determination that, you know, I'm going to prove this doctor wrong. And then a week later, of all days, on Thanksgiving Day, I wiggle my left big toe. He said I would never move again. And I was so pumped. I was so fired up. I was telling every nurse and therapist, you go find that doctor, who I like to call Dr. Phantom, and you bring him in here and phantom this as I wiggle my toe in his face. And fortunately, you know, for him, he was gone that day, but it probably worked out for the best because I might have been a little too fired up. But that toe wiggle, though, grew to just give me even more confidence and belief. And I eventually slowly progressed to the point where I could support myself standing. And I set the goal that, you know what, I'm going to walk across the stage of my college graduation. I don't know how I'm going to do it, but that's just going to be the goal. I'm just going to work as hard as I can each and every day. And so spending, you know, sometimes 4 to 6 hours a day, a full school load. I went back to college. I met this a wonderful woman who you mentioned already, Emily. And 3 years after my injury, my junior year of college, and she would help me walk across the stage of my college graduation, which was our first big walk. And that went viral. So it's been viewed over 300 million times across the world. And after that, it going viral and it inspiring people. People were writing to us how, because of this example and this act of perseverance, they too want to persevere through their own adversities, that they want to get through their challenges. And whether it was a disability, a depression, anxiety, losing faith, whatever it may be, they just found this courage and this inspiration in themselves. And so with that in mind, that's what led us to do this wedding walk. I'm like, we have to walk down the aisle of the wedding together, knowing what it can do for others. And so, like you mentioned before, it's on the title of the book, but we were able to walk then 7 yards down the aisle side by side, the same way we'd be spending the rest of our lives together. And it was a wonderful day, wonderful moment. And we get to share all about it with in the book and the documentary and also my motivational speeches.
All right, we're going to take a break from the conversation with Chris. But when we come back, I'm going to ask him why it was important that Emily wrote the book along with him, what productivity means to him, and what, if anything, would he change? But I'm going to share with you first what I think you should change about your social media approach. And I think the best way you can do that is with Meet Edgar. Meet Edgar is a social media automation tool that was founded in 2014 by Laura Roeder, who she was just really tired of doing social the time-wasty, old-fashioned way. Meet Edgar is a tool I've been using for a while. I'm digging into it more and more with my study time that I'm doing on an everyday basis. There's a lot to you can do with Meet Edgar, but it's not like it's complicated and you can't get started right out of the gate. I mean, really what Meet Edgar does is it helps you amplify your presence and message across multiple social networks. And you can sync Meet Edgar like I have with Facebook and with LinkedIn and with Twitter and with Instagram. So that way you can connect with your audience where they are and when they're there. Now, one of the things that happened to me this week is I received an email from Meet Edgar, because once you're in the loop, you're in the loop. And see, once you sign up, you're going to get access to a whole bunch of educational stuff, including an onboarding coach, live social media marketing office hours, and just a lot of educational courses, including this little nugget I got from this week called Operation Sunshine. So this is how this works. And it's going to highlight some of the features that Meet Edgar offers. So first off, what you need to do, if you're using Meet Edgar, and you're going to be able to, just stick around for the rest of this commentary here, but you just look up the top blogs in your industry, all right? Then you find two or three that you know that people who follow you will love. And then just make sure that you choose blogs that, you know, complement with your own content. They don't necessarily need to compete with it, but they complement it. And then add their RSS feeds to Edgar. See, you can do that. You can add your own as well. So you can add your own blog, podcast, or YouTube channel RSS feeds to Meet Edgar so it can pull in your latest content. In this case, it'll pull in their latest content and add it to your social sharing queue. That's what you do. Now, if you want to do a little bit of a bonus with this, what they're calling Operation Sunshine, just generate some suggested variations and then add your own commentary to the mix and customize the message. And you can do that as well. See, they've got the category-based unique scheduler. They've got the unique suggested variations, which turns a single blog post or your podcast show notes into five unique social posts with just a single click. And again, that category-based scheduler is amazing. It saves you a ton of time. It keeps your feeds active. And then you can post the right content to the right network at the optimal time. So how do you take advantage of what Meet Edgar has to offer and do this Operation Sunshine? Well, you just go to meetedgar.com/timecrafting and use the promo code timecrafting to get an extended 60-day free trial. That's right. All you need to do is go to meetedgar.com/timecrafting and use this promo code timecrafting, and you'll get that 60-day extended free trial. That's a huge amount of time. That's going to take you through all the way until the new year if you're listening to this as this podcast goes live. So once again, go to meetedgar.com/timecrafting, use the code timecrafting, get an extended 60-day free trial. You're going to love Meet Edgar. Give it a try today. Now, if you want to take your education and your knowledge and your skill set to the next level, the UCI Division of Continuing Education can make that happen for you. The UCI Division of Continuing Education was established in 1962 and has served the lifelong learning and career development needs of individuals, organizations, and the community on a local, regional, and global scale. There are courses and certifications taught by industry practitioners in a wide range of categories and over 60 convenient certificates and specialized studies programs on campus and online designed for the working professional like you. The UCI Division of Continuing Education can help you gain an edge in your career as well. It can help you make a career transition or simply help you become more knowledgeable. See, they can provide you with the flexibility you need to stay on top of your game in your current role while preparing you to level up. There's open enrollment too, and what that means is there's no applications to complete. You just log in and sign up, and you can pay for a single course or enroll in an entire certificate program. You have full control over your academic plan, and you can advance your career in as little as 6 months. So give yourself the gift of education. Don't overlook the value of investing in yourself. Sure, it's easy to give gifts to your friends and family, but if you have career goals and aspirations for 2020, then now's the time to invest in yourself and your career. So visit ce.uci.edu/productivityist and enter the promo code TIMECRAFTING for 15% off of one course. That's ce.uci.edu/productivityist. Enter the promo code TIMECRAFTING and you'll get 15% off of one course. This offer is valid only until December 31st, 2019 at 11:59 p.m., so take advantage of it while you can. Again, that's ce.uci.edu/productivityist. Enter the promo code TIMECRAFTING to get that 15% off of one course. Don't delay. Check out what the UCI Division of Continuing Education can offer you today. I want to tell you about the calendar app that I've been waiting for. I absolutely love Woven. It's allowed me to streamline my appointment bookings on so many levels and is an absolute pleasure to use. The templates are a huge time saver. The scheduling links are phenomenal, and the ability to quickly toggle between what is my time and everything else on my calendar gives me a quick snapshot of my day like no other calendar app does. Now, I don't often tout apps because there are so many out there, and a lot of it boils down to personal choice over anything else, but I can confidently say that choosing Woven as your calendar app of choice would be a step in the right direction. Ultimately, the reason I use Woven is because Woven Calendar features powerful scheduling tools built into a smart, collaborative calendar. Now, Woven Calendar takes all the hassle out. I've just mentioned that, but really scheduling is a huge deal. And they've really combined these powerful scheduling tools like Woven Smart Templates, which I use to book podcast guests and coaching calls and coffee and all that stuff. Scheduling links, which I also can use to book podcast guests and all that stuff. And group polls too. So you can actually have polls where you can say, hey, when's the best time to meet? It's all in one place. It's all in a smart collaborative calendar. With Woven, everything you need to schedule is at your fingertips, and it's at your fingertips in a way that will allow you to schedule it fast and furious. Mainly fast, though. Listen, I want you to add Woven to your productivity stack and schedule faster than ever before. So sign up today. Just go to woven.com/timecrafting and make it happen. Again, woven.com/timecrafting. Sign up today for Woven. It's seriously the best calendar app out there. I absolutely love it, and I know you will too. Again, woven.com/timecrafting. Check it out today. Now let's get back to my conversation with Chris. Before we hopped on the call and started recording it, we actually were on the call, but one of the things that we started talking about was football. Because, I mean, that, again, I remember listening to you talking to Jonathan, and you're talking about, like, the story and reading the book. I'm like, this guy loves football. Still, I mean, obviously, you still, and I asked, you know, do you still watch it? You said yes. What lessons do you take from football today that you can apply to your life now? Because I watch the game because there's a lot happens in a short period of time. And then there's that, you know, 30-second break approximately. And I'm talking pro football here, but I mean, there's lots of variations. And I'm talking American pro football, not Canadian football, which, you know, I do watch, but it can be very confusing to anybody who has not seen it before. But the idea of, like, you have to make very quick decisions both during the play and leading into it. And I think life's a lot like that too. So, you know, skipping the brutality element and stuff that I know some people can have issue with. What lessons do you still take from football that you apply to your life now?
You know, one that jumps out in mind is, I can see the parallels too. So, in football, there was two-a-days, which now they're really going away from two-a-days. Just a lot of different health and overheating kind of complications. But back in the day when I was doing two-a-days, which isn't that long ago, I'll never forget, we're doing these wind sprints across the field. And you got your full football gear and pads on. You've already gone through like two practices. And I threw up at the end of practice, just completely wiped out, dehydrated. But then you have to jump back in to practice. Like, you don't just get practice off. Well, fast forward a year and I'm in the hospital, training with this leg bike that's stimulating my legs to go around this machine. And I throw up from the exhaustion of this workout. And then my therapists are like, okay, like, we'll just call it a day. You know, great job. I hope you're feeling better. And he's like, no, like, I'm not done. Just because I threw up doesn't mean I'm going to quit. Like, we got to keep going. But they were just all shocked by, like, me just wanting to keep going. But I think for any, like, athlete or any person that, you know, puts yourself through some pretty strenuous situations, you learn about yourself that you can handle more than what you think you can handle. And it allows you to see your potential. And so it allowed me to know that my limits and that I can push it beyond what you would think is possible. So I think just with having football, having that accountability for your teammates, having that environment, I elevated my level of hard work and perseverance and courage that carried over to my training for my recovery to get my movement, my arms back, and my legs back.
I want to continue down the sidebar a bit because when I chatted with Don Yeager, who's written about plenty of sports, sportsmen, whether, you know, we're talking Walter Payton, we're talking, you know, looking at what John Wooden's done, you know, a variety of sports. And even to the point where, you know, I'm not an athlete. Like, the closest I've come to playing football well is on my Xbox. And so for me, but it's more about, I think that there's a lot of lessons that you can take from sport, whether you're an athlete or not. Like, I mean, I wrote a book called The Front Nine, How to Start the Year You Want Anytime You Want, using golf as a metaphor. I don't play golf, but I understood the game and I understood some of the nuances of it just by studying it. Playing it's different though. And so I think that what I'd love to like just touch on a bit is, you know, some of the things that people need to know that maybe don't play sports or haven't, or like almost dismiss them out of hand as to what the, you know, following or keeping up with. There's some story there and there's some things there that we could probably use to help us keep more productive and in a world that maybe sometimes wants to drag us down. But like, I'd love to get your thoughts on that a little bit.
Yeah. What I love about sports, and, you know, so I'm a father now. We've adopted 5 girls out of the foster care system. We've fostered 17 children. And one thing that, you know, is important for Emily and I, and the reason why we want to get them in sports, and I mean, even like, you know, whether it's like a choir or any sort of extracurricular activity, but just give them a situation where they fail. Like, we want them to experience failure and how to handle that failure. And I think that's what I really appreciate about sports, and what it's taught me is learning to fail and knowing that just because you fail does not mean you're a failure. Like, a bad choice does not make you a bad person, that what's going wrong isn't going to get worse. It's just not true. And so I think it's just helped me identify that I can work through this. Like, I can get better. I can improve, that it's not final. But yet you have to learn through failure, I think, sometimes, to just keep falling forward. And I think sports taught me to fall forward and to learn from my mistakes, but that those mistakes don't make me and myself, my identity, a mistake. And that's what I'm trying to teach my kids, because especially when they first came to us, they got really wrapped up in the idea that if they messed up or they failed, that that's who they are as a person. And it's like, no, not, like, that's not true. Like, that's going to happen. You just got to keep picking yourself back up and keep trying again. And sports force you to do that.
Let's talk about fatherhood for a moment. I'm a father as well. I've got a father. I do have a father, but I also am also the father of two kids, one of whom is actually homesick today. You've got, like you said, that's how it works. Actually, yesterday was supposed to be a day where I film, and my daughter was homesick, and I'm like, well, you know what? That throws that plan out the window, because, you know, I'm not going to invite anybody in the house while, you know, with the potential of them getting sick. But you fostered 17 children, adopted 5 girls. What, I mean, most people would struggle, you know, or find that challenging without the challenges that you faced, and how have you been able to not only make that work, but thrive in that environment? Because I mean, it's a lot, you know, it's a lot.
Yeah, it is. Thankfully I have a wonderful wife. She is a rock star and just loves children, loves just loving on them and teaching them, and just is so full of life that, that definitely helps. Where, you know, not the full responsibility is like on my shoulders. It's a shared responsibility. And then it's just having us as a team, and then just also learning. We're trying to do as much as we can to learn from other parents and learn from books or podcasts, you know, whatever it may be, for us to be the best parents possible and to be the most, you know, efficient, and so the kids know that they're loved, that they're special. Because a lot of times they come in thinking that they're not loved, that they're not special. So how can we communicate that in a really effective way so they understand that? But yeah, I think all those things have really helped us manage the chaos. And then we also know that having 5 kids, you know, being parents, it comes with the territory. There's going to be chaos, and just understanding that you got to let go of some of that chaos and just control what you can control, and be in the moment, and don't get caught up in, you know, what's going wrong, but focus on what's going right.
Let's talk about Emily for a second here, because you wrote the book together. There's there's a back and forth that happens in the book. Why was it important that you wrote the book together and the way that you constructed it? Why was that what was the idea behind that, and why was it important for you to present it that way?
It was important to me because Emily's a big part of my story. So I feel like I couldn't effectively tell my story without including her in it. And then Emily just brings a whole another set of perspective and wisdom and experience that I just don't have. So something really special about Emily, and something I'm really proud about her, is that she opens up about her struggles with anxiety and depression. She went through a bout of, pretty a dark depression that it could have cost her life potentially. If it wasn't for seeking help and doing the right steps to get out of that, but just sharing that perspective too, when she put on such a front that she was fine, that everything was good. And you would assume that she's got it all figured out, but she didn't. And she was hiding it. And so many people hide, some of the struggles that they're going through. And when you have mental health issues, those are easily, you can hide those easily. Like my challenges, I can't hide my physical challenges. Everybody knows I'm going through something, but most of the painful challenges that we're all going through, you can't see. You can't see a depression. You can't see a divorce. You can't see someone struggling to pay bills. Sometimes you can't even see cancer. So without the physical signs, sometimes people aren't always kind, and they're not always thoughtful with how they treat other people. And something that I'm always preaching is just considering what other people are going through, that we all have our struggles, whether you see it or not.
As we get close to wrapping up here, I want to ask a couple more questions. And one is definitely related to productivity, in a very distinct way. So I'm a big believer that productivity isn't about efficiency and effectiveness on its face. It's what's your intention? How are you going to pay attention to it? So this idea of intention plus attention. You seem to have been able to do that in many areas of your life. So I posit that it's probably something similar to what you think is the idea of intention plus attention. But when you think about productivity, what does it mean to you, and how do you try to espouse it, not just for yourself, but for the people that you're speaking to, because you're a motivational speaker and you help people through your organization, but also with your children?
Something that's really helped me is just a question of, I ask myself, who is counting on me? Who are the people in my life that need me to be my best self? And when I think about that, I instantly think of my wife. I think about my kids. I think about my parents, siblings, grandparents. The list goes on. But when I can just reflect on who I need to be my best self for, it allows me to, one, I guess, like you mentioned, be intentional about just leveling myself to a higher degree and holding myself to a higher standard that I might not be able to hold for myself. But when I have other people counting on me, it just allows me to work harder, just be a better person in general. And I think I would challenge, everyone listening to ask yourself that, and to even make a list of the people who are counting on you. Because I think we'll always do more for others when we know someone else is counting on you. And so the next time you just catch yourself going through the motions, ask yourself, who needs you to keep going so that they can keep going? Who needs you to succeed at what you do so that someone else can follow your example? And the best leaders, don't inspire by their title. They inspire by their example, and understanding that, people need your example. People need you to be your best self.
We started off talking about resilience with this discussion, and I want to bring another reword into the conversation as we wrap up. The idea of regret. At the end of the book, it's the epilogue is "wouldn't change a thing." So that flies in the face of regret. And I think a lot of people, when they're looking at their, whether it's the day, whether it's their to-do list, whether it's, a project that they didn't live up to, whether it's, on occasion when you've feel like you've let your kids down. How have you been able to kind of fight back against this idea of regret? Because anybody faces adversity is going to have some elements of regret can kind of creep in there, but it doesn't seem to have crept in there for you or Emily.
Yeah. In the beginning for me, I just knew, I'm like, okay, I can't take this back. I cannot rewind time. I don't have that power or capabilities. Like, I have to move forward. I have to take complete ownership over my life moving forward. Like, I cannot just dwell in the past. So I really try to block my mind and distract my mind as well from going there. And then as I just continue to work, continue to just fight through it and just keep taking action, the more like my life started to become more meaningful as things started to come together. I formed a nonprofit called the Chris Norton Foundation to help other people with spinal cord injuries. And then with meeting Emily, adopting and fostering a family, my motivational speaking business, and the list goes on, I started to see how all these things came together as a result of that football play. And so how can I now want to change that play when I have all these wonderful things in my life that have been resulted from that day? And so there's just no way I could go back and change that play. And so I don't have any regret over that moment because it's given me a purpose and a life worth living for. And I'm really grateful for where I'm at. And I've also come to the understanding that my physical ability doesn't determine my happiness or my fulfillment or success. I used to think that I have to walk in order to feel successful, but I mean, your happiness and joy doesn't become from like your physical abilities. I mean, there's people who walk and who can run and jump really well who are miserable. It all comes from like that state of gratitude and appreciation and focusing on your abilities and what you can do. That's what is most important, no matter what you're going through. If you can keep your state of mind in that place, it's going to keep you motivated, inspired to move forward and to take action.
Chris, this has been a fantastic conversation. Thanks so much for taking the time to share it with me. One more question. Who wins the Super Bowl this year?
I mean, I have to go with my team. And it's so early in the season. And I feel like it's a coin toss. We'll see if everybody can stay healthy, but Minnesota Vikings. I mean, they got to get one eventually, right?
They do. They do. And I mean, the easy thing would be to say Brady's team. I don't like to say the actual name of the team. But yeah. I mean, it's hard to beat them. And even Kansas City looks really good too with Mahomes. I mean, they look really good. It's going to be, I mean, the good news is, I guess, is if you're looking at it from the vantage point of where the Vikings are, they're in the NFC. So they may get there. They may have the clearest path to the, by the time the AFC team gets there, they may be so beaten up that Cousins has got to start playing better. That's all I got to say about that. We talked about that before the start of the show. I mean, they'll only go as far as their defense and Dalvin Cook will take them, I think, at this point.
It looks like it. You're right.
Chris, the book is called The Seven Longest Yards, written by yourself and your wife, Emily. Where can people learn more about you and keep up with your work?
You can go to chrisnorton.org, chrisnorton.org, and that's where my foundation, my speaking, the books, the documentary, my social media, all that can be found through there, my newsletter. The social media, I'm pretty active on Instagram and Facebook, and it's at ChrisANorton16.
Chris, thanks for joining me today on the Productivityist Podcast.
Thanks for having me, Mike.
Big thanks to Chris Norton for joining me today on the show. You can find all of the show notes at productivityist.com/podcast271. Or, of course, you can just look down at your device that you're likely listening to this episode on and just choose the show notes from there. If you are not subscribed to the podcast yet, why not? You like this episode, right? Well, there's so many more in the back catalog, over 5 years worth of podcasts with guests such as David Allen, Srinivas Rao, there's so many, Eric Fisher. I can't, you just got to go look. Okay. So subscribe to the podcast. You'll get all new episodes as they come out, and you'll be able to easily find things in the back catalog. And while you're subscribed, you might as well give a rating and review to the podcast as well, whether it's an Apple Podcast, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Podcast, doesn't really matter. Ratings and reviews help people find the show, but they also help me see what I need to improve upon and what you like and what you don't like, all that stuff. So again, if you're not subscribed yet, please subscribe to the podcast. And it also helps our sponsors too, who I'd like to thank. You know, select our sponsors, go to find out what they're offering. It's always great to see listeners of the podcast subscribe to the podcast, but also check out what the sponsors have to offer. And then again, ratings and reviews, always super helpful. Speaking of reviews, I want to share with you my Productivity is Podcast pick of the week. And this week, it's the Read to Lead podcast with Jeff Brown. Now, Jeff talked about me on his podcast, and I'm going to talk about him on mine. Eventually, he's going to be on mine. We're working out a schedule on that. But Jeff's been doing this for a long time, and he is a pro's pro. There are a lot of common guests that we've had. Michael Ventura would be one of them about empathy, but episode 277, How to Succeed in a Project-Driven World. I'm a big believer in working by modality. If you've listened to the show for an extended period of time, you know that. So this one intrigued me because we do live in a project-based world, a project-driven world. So that's a great episode to check out. He's had Brian Dixon on the podcast as well, The Daily Decision That Changes Everything, of course. So many great episodes. He is basically at the same, we're at the same cadence at this point in terms of episodes. He's a little bit further up the road than me with this particular podcast. And it's, of course, because it's got lasting power. It's staying power. It's a great podcast. The Read Lead podcast. Check it out. It's my Productivity is Podcast pick of the week. That's it for this week. Thanks again for listening. Until next time, I'm Mike Bardi, the host of the Productivity is Podcast, reminding you to stop guessing and start going. See you later.